Part 3. Conclusion. 10. Realignment and Beyond. In June 1963, U.S. President John F. Kennedy made his last state tour to several European capitals. In Bonn, he met with German Chancellor Konrad Adenauer, and then moved on to Berlin, where he made his historic Ich bin ein Berliner speech. His next stop was a visit to his family's ancestral home in Ireland, where he gave an address to the Irish Parliament. The president then traveled to London to meet Prime Minister Harold Macmillan. His last stop was Rome, and a meeting with Italian political figures and Pope Paul IV. I begin with this Back to the Future story to remind us that in focusing on current political events, it is easy to lose historical perspective. I think that if Kennedy and those European political leaders time-traveled to today, they would experience future shock. Ireland was extremely traditional and religious in 1963. Germany and Italy struggled with post-war economic recovery and the challenges of building democratic systems. British politics were still defined by class and the old political order. And Kennedy could never have imagined that Barack Obama would be the 44th president of the United States. The politics and issues of today would prompt them to look for signs of such historic changes that they had missed in the early 1960s. Social modernization since the mid-1900s has been an overwhelmingly positive force for these societies and their citizens. This process dramatically improved the living standards of the average person and produced a much more educated public with access to incredible information sources. These changes lessened many of the traditional economic hardships that had long been a source of political competition. The average European or American today lives longer and lives better than their post-World War II relatives. Economic needs and inequality still exist, but now in the context of affluent societies. Modernization has also transformed the cultural basis of these societies. A recent study by Steven Pinker provides an impressive inventory of how the human condition in affluent democracies has improved in fundamental ways. The rights and status of women have improved dramatically, even if the journey is incomplete. Minority social and political groups now possess greater rights. Individual freedoms have dramatically expanded. People have more personal freedom in their life choices. Self-expressive values spread throughout these populations. Social and political tolerance has generally increased, even if these norms seem strained in the current political climate. Modernization is how society makes progress in improving the human condition. And yet, social modernization is also a disruptive force. Spreading affluence, increased education, and the development of an advanced industrial society transformed the economic base of these nations. Economic globalization improved average living standards in the West, but at the cost of deindustrialization and the marginalization of parts of society. The declining number of working-class employees and a rising new middle class redefined the occupational structure and the values of the average citizen. Inequality in income and wealth increased in parallel with economic growth. These trends reshaped the economic cleavage to address these changing circumstances, and these new economic divisions still impact political choices. Equally important, modernization brought new cultural issues to the fore. Environmental quality has constrained economic growth, gender equality is more salient, citizens are increasingly concerned about their rights and their ability to influence decisions affecting their lives, and individual lifestyles are more varied. In reaction to these changes, a conservative counter-movement began stressing the perceived loss of traditional moral values, social relations, and a sense of nation. This book has described this evolutionary tale in Western Europe and the United States. Social group alignments shifted in systematic ways to reflect this new constellation of political issues. The working class and elements of the new middle class shifted their positions on economic and cultural issues. Educational groups and generations also polarized on the cultural cleavage. Chapters 2 to 4 describe this realignment in the political demands of contemporary publics in terms of the economic and cultural cleavages that define the space for political competition. Democratic party systems also responded to these changing social and political conditions. In the 1980s to 1990s, new left and green parties emerged to represent liberal cultural issues. More recently, new culturally conservative parties have formed to represent these views. The established parties were buffeted by these forces, adapting to changing political realities to ensure their continued parliamentary representation, or failing if they did not successfully adapt. This realigned party system now forms the basis of political competition in most of these affluent democracies. Chapters 5 to 8 described these changes in party supply. Realignments, like many other phenomena, are easier to identify looking backward than looking forward. Political scientists initially could not determine how parties and voters would respond to these forces of social change, and there were reasons to doubt a new cleavage could generate a persisting realignment. But the evidence presented here, and in several recent studies, is clear. Democratic publics and party systems have undergone a realignment that reshaped the basis of political competition in most affluent democracies. These developments have also introduced new political tensions into these systems as parties and governments confront a changing political reality and competing political demands. It seems that few of us feel we live in the best of times, especially when it comes to politics. Trust in government has declined in most affluent democracies, and many citizens feel their nation is on the wrong course. Images of political parties are close to the bottom of the barrel. In 2017, California's former governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, advocated several institutional reforms of U.S. politics with a video listing the things that Americans rated more positively than the U.S. Congress: hemorrhoids, Nickelback, traffic jams, cockroaches, root canals, colonoscopies, and even herpes. It would be funny if it were not so true. And since then, the American public and others has probably become more cynical. How is it that we live in the best of times, yet many of us feel it is the worst of times politically? And what are the consequences for public sentiments and electoral politics? This chapter reviews this book's evidence on the nature of political change among contemporary publics and its implications for electoral politics and the democratic process. Social change and political cleavages. Modern societies have always been complex, but the complexity has increased. When Seymour Lipset and Stein Rokon wrote about political cleavages in mid-20th century Europe, they identified four significant lines of political division. Political cleavages comprise enduring differences in social interests and values that are expressed in a set of political issues. The issues might change over time as social conditions or political events change, but there is continuity in the underlying social divisions. For Lipset and Rokon, as well as others writing on political cleavages, there was also a social group basis for a cleavage, such as the labor movement, religion, or other parts of civil society. In most instances, the prominent political conflicts in a nation could be aligned along a single dimension. Typically, this was an economic cleavage concerning the role of the state, social welfare provisions, and related issues. In other nations, such as France, Germany, and Italy, a secular, liberal economic position competed against a religious, conservative economic position as the dominant line of cleavage. Regional and urban-rural differences existed, but were of lesser importance in most nations. This study identified a fundamental change in the gradual expansion from a single dimension of political competition to a two-dimensional space defined in economic and cultural terms. The persistence of the economic cleavage reflects its importance in defining life chances and the conditions of life. This includes evolving issues on the role of the state, the protection of citizens from economic hardships, guaranteeing the vitality of the economy, the equality of opportunity, and similar issues. Governments of the left and the right vary in their positions on these issues, and public opinion shifts in response to current circumstances. An issue as basic as setting tax rates is subject to continual competition and negotiation. This study demonstrated the persistence of the underlying economic division over recent decades. By its nature, modernization is a disruptive process that creates new economic conflicts with new winners and losers. Globalization and neoliberal economic policies provide the most obvious example. Even if increased international trade provides a net benefit to a society, some may benefit more than others, and some may lose. The process of European unification also has winners and losers. The disruptive effects of new technologies, such as has occurred in the Internet age, can have similar outcomes. And naturally, but unfortunately, the winners are less concerned about the losers, which generates new economic policy differences or accentuates existing differences. These political issues involve self-interest, as well as values such as acceptance of inequality, beliefs in a meritocracy, and other values. Modernization also generates transformations in non-economic conditions that are bundled under the heading of cultural change. Environmentalism, for example, benefits the society overall, but also creates economic or social costs for some. The progressive norms of social modernization come into conflict with the traditional norms of other citizens. Most affluent democracies are more socially and ethnically diverse than they were a generation ago. New tensions arise over the equality of opportunity versus the equality of outcomes. Cultural cleavage issues involve both social norms and potential redistributive effects. Thus, the tension between modernization forces and traditionalism is a persistent theme in contemporary societies, which has become more apparent in recent years. This study tracked the effects of this modernization process on electoral politics. First, through the changing issue demands of contemporary publics. Second, through changes in the supply of political choices offered in party systems. And through the supply-demand relationship that has realigned party systems. The economic cleavage. I briefly touch on the economic cleavage because political differences on the cleavage are a familiar part of society and politics, because these issues are long-standing and easily interpreted in terms of the economic self-interest of contending groups. The less affluent and the working class are more positive toward government protections of social welfare and government involvement in the economy. The affluent and the middle class tend to lean toward more market-oriented government policies. These positions have not fundamentally changed over the time span of our study. Yet I have described a modest change in citizen positions on the economic cleavage over time. As societies modernized and the working class share of the public decreased, the median voter shifted toward the growing middle class and their more conservative economic positions. Chapter 3. Economic change comes less from a shift in the position of class grouping than from the size of class groupings. This provides an opportunity and incentive for political elites to respond to the public's changing economic views. Jeffrey Evans and James Tilley utilized rich longitudinal data in Britain that tracks the broader cross-national patterns described here. The cultural cleavage. There is much more debate on the content and the meaning of the cultural cleavage, so I give more attention to this topic. For instance, some research emphasizes globalization as a driving force dividing winners and losers on cultural issues. Others attribute it to the tension between religious values versus secularism. Many liberal political analysts treat cultural conservatives as synonymous with racist, sexist, or homophobic views. Cultural conservatives, in contrast, label liberals as godless, socialist snowflakes, or worse. Such labeling stifles discussion and lessens awareness of the nature of this cleavage. The cultural cleavage has the potential to generate such passions because it represents alternative worldviews of who we are and what we value. To question these values is to question the identity and worth of those who believe them. I see the wellspring of the current cultural cleavage as a tension produced by broad processes of social modernization, social changes that challenge the status quo, and resource redistribution embedded in social modernization. Specific issues flow from these forces, and attitudes toward social change are more than just one issue or another. Some evidence of the breadth of the cultural cleavage comes from the diverse set of issues that define this cleavage in the various surveys used in this book. The clearest examples are the two U.S. surveys during the 2016 presidential election. The issues most related to the cultural cleavage cover a diverse range of topics: transgender policy, abortion policy, defense spending, sending troops to fight ISIS, providing services to same-sex couples, limiting immigration, the death penalty for murder, and the treatment of African Americans. There is even greater diversity if one compares the composition of the cultural cleavage across the various U.S. and European surveys used in this book. If we view the cultural cleavage as a broad reaction to social modernization, this provides a different understanding of the cleavage and the forces influencing citizen opinions. Catherine Kramer and Arlie Hochschild describe one potential cause of cultural conservatism, which is seen in the demographic correlates of these opinions in Chapter 3. The people they interviewed in rural America felt they were losing their place in line while trying to improve their lives and their families' lives. They felt the political establishment was unresponsive to their needs and values, and that resources were being given to less deserving individuals or groups. Noam Gidron and Peter Hall find similar evidence that those feeling left behind by the modernization process in Europe look for expanded social recognition. Self-interest differences across social groups reflected the same type of the social cleavages that Lipset and Rokon described: groups competing for influence and policies favorable to their group. Self-interest is only a partial explanation of positions on the cultural cleavage, however. The modernization future shock literature implies that the process of social change itself evokes resistance along specific lines. Research links the aversion to social change to core values and personality traits, such as an open, closed mind, risk aversion, openness to new experience, desires for predictability, or other apolitical traits. That is, the cultural aspects of recent social modernization trends challenge communitarian values, concerns for stability and order, and the respect for tradition that are often held by conservatives. Some empirical evidence comes from research that separately predicts economic and social cultural attitudes. For example, Stanley Feldman and Christopher Johnston demonstrated that abstract attitudes toward authority, egalitarianism, and the desire for cognitive simplicity are systematically related to economic and cultural attitudes. Paul Gorin and his colleagues have similarly shown that basic human values tapped by the Schwartz values battery are significantly related to policy preference indices. The most direct influence comes from a recent study by Matt Grossman and Daniel Thaler. They developed a measure of aversion to social change and tested its influence on voting in the 2016 U.S. elections. They make an important distinction. Our concept of attitudes toward social change is related to, but distinguishable from, racial resentment, which usually involves specific attitudes toward African Americans, authoritarianism, usually measured as parenting attitudes, and ethnocentrism, including attitudes toward Latinos and Muslims. Although related to conservative ideology and religiosity, it constitutes a separate set of ideas regarding the direction of society and its assumed high-paced shift from traditional values to more diverse ideas and groups. Justin Guest and his colleagues have described this syndrome as nostalgic deprivation and demonstrated how a perceived loss in social status is correlated with support for far-right politics in the United States and Britain. In other words, the foundation of the cultural cleavage also arises from attitudes toward social change that can be traced to personality traits or core values, which are actuated by the specific social conditions in a nation. Some scholars interpret this reaction to social change through the prisms of race, gender, or some other identity-based framework. But looking through prisms can also distort our vision. For most cultural conservatives, this is not a call for a return to a period of racial privilege, gender discrimination, or similar types of bias, although it would be a mistake to ignore that a minority still harbor these sentiments. Rather, It is that the balance between various desired norms has changed beyond their preference point. Many people can look back to the past and see things that they would prefer, such as the image of a simpler life, a greater sense of community, a more orderly society, or a less competitive society, even though they would rather live in the present. It might be described as nostalgic deprivation in the United States, or the appeal of Heimat in Germany, or similar traditional notions in other European countries. In simple terms, as society changes, some people will want it to change even more rapidly, and other people will find change, per se, unsettling. Social modernization and the American public. I explore the potential impact of attitudes toward modernization using a battery of questions in the American National Election Studies. These questions tap acceptance of social change, or what the ANES calls moral traditionalism. Since the 1980s, the ANES has asked the following four questions. The world is always changing, and we should adjust our view of moral behavior to those changes. The newer lifestyles are contributing to the breakdown of our society. We should be more tolerant of people who choose to live according to their own moral standards, even if they are very different from our own. This country would have many fewer problems if there were more emphasis on traditional family ties. Many Americans recognize these sentiments, even if we don't agree. We hear them from relatives, co-workers, or neighbors who see their society changing and are uncertain about their future or their children's future. Their personality may encourage these views even when things are not changing. Many Europeans also share these sentiments when they worry about globalization, the transformation of contemporary society, their children's experiences, and the uncertainty of the future in a rapidly changing world. Moreover, embedded in these change questions is a concern about a specific direction of change, away from the communitarian, moral, and orderly patterns of the past, toward the individualistic and universalist values encouraged by the modernization process. One study tracks public sentiment on an index combining these four social change questions. Over this 28-year span, Americans become more supportive of social change, with the high point in 2016. This should occur as a product of social modernization, rising education levels, increased living standards, the expansion of information through the mass media, more cosmopolitan lifestyles, and so on. Indeed, a similar liberal trend appears in public opinion toward race, gender equality, gay rights, political tolerance, self-expressive values, and other key elements of the cultural cleavage. Moreover, this time series only begins in 1988, and therefore misses the presumably large changes starting in the 1960s and 1970s. The easy assumption is that resistance to social change is concentrated among those social groups who benefited in the stereotypical America of the 1950s. As E.J. Dionne, Norm Ornstein, and Thomas Mann have observed, one person's reverence for tradition can be seen by another as a rationalization for prejudice and oppression, or as a reaction to changes in life opportunities. Reality does not follow the negative stereotype, because attitudes toward social change cut across the typical demographic markers. In the 2016 ANES, for example, gender differences are essentially non-existent. 39% of men score in the top two quintiles supporting social change, as do 40% of women. Racial differences are also minor. Clear support for social change is expressed by 35% of African Americans, 39% of non-Hispanic whites, and 43% of Hispanics. Instead of these identity politics markers, the predictors of social change are factors such as age, education, and religiosity. This implies that the survey questions are tapping attitudes toward modernization and rapid social change more than specific political controversies. The ultimate question is whether these attitudes are directly related to the issues defining the cultural cleavage. The solid line depicted in one study presents the correlation between support for social change and liberal positions on the cultural cleavage. There is a very strong relationship in every survey since the series began in 1988. This is all the more striking, since each survey includes a different set of issues tapping the cultural cleavage, and the two indices are from different pre-post-election waves of the ANES. Moreover, the correlation between these two measures is strongest in the highly polarized 2016 election, R equals 0.61. The strength of the 2016 relationship is exceptional, since tests retest statistics of many political attitudes often show lower correlations. In part, the 2016 findings may be a reaction to the expansion of liberal cultural policies during the second term of the Obama administration, polarizing opinions among cultural liberals and conservatives. The strong relationship is also likely a reaction of the two 2016 presidential candidates who articulated contrasting cultural appeals in their campaigns. Chapter 9. Indeed, reactions to social change have a growing relationship with presidential candidate preferences over time, which is further evidence of the growing political tensions over social change. It may seem inconsistent that the impact of the cultural cleavage on candidate preferences strengthens over time, coterminous with increasing acceptance of social change, but the very process of liberal social change generates a conservative reaction. The goal of progressive politics is to change social and political standards, so the resolution of one issue leads to another challenge to the status quo, and so forth. As liberal policies have expanded in the United States over the past several decades, this generates an evolving reaction from conservatives. This seems to be an inevitable byproduct of social modernization, which was not always recognized during the initial waves of social change. Although the empirical evidence is drawn only from the United States, I expect the same patterns generally exist in other affluent democracies. As politicians pushed forward European unification, for example, the resistance to a mantra of ever closer union grew. As the rights revolution spread to more sectors of society, cultural conservatives were more likely to resist. As non-European immigration increased, sensitivity to immigration also increased. Newton's third law applies to politics. This evidence is not a justification or rationalization of those who hold liberal or conservative positions on the cultural cleavage. The very culturally liberal will vehemently disagree with the very culturally conservative because of their different worldviews. Centrists will see both poles as too extreme. The value of these analyses is in illustrating the broader source of these cleavage positions that go beyond the specific issues of debate. The democratic process provides a means to adjudicate such large value differences. The challenge for political parties. As societies change and citizens change, political parties as representative institutions should respond to these changes in the public's preferences. One narrative describes a common pattern for many of the large social democratic labor parties in Europe. The declining numbers of working-class voters created a problem for these parties if they wished to continue to win elections and promote their causes. In most cases, these parties broadened their political program to appeal to middle-class voters who were increasing in numbers, especially professionals, the well-educated, and members of the creative class. These social groups are the main winners in social modernization. They are liberal on cultural issues, but often lean toward conservative socioeconomic programs. Across the established democracies, many left-leaning political parties try to align themselves with an economically liberal working class and a culturally liberal middle class. Parties that followed this strategy felt the strain of trying to address two constituencies with varied interests. As the cultural cleavage evolved and crystallized into a more distinct set of issues, this strain increased. The PVDA is an exceptional example of a party that shifted its agenda toward post-material, liberal cultural positions after the collapse of the class and religious pillars in the Dutch system in the 1970s. the emergence of Green and New Left parties focusing on young, liberal, middle-class voters who might once have been members of the Social Democratic Youth Organizations further encouraged the PVDA to adopt more culturally liberal positions while moderating its economic positions. The PVDA illustrates the consequences of riding two horses at once. Its vote share fell from 33.8% in 1977 to 5.7% in 2017. Neither constituency was well represented by the party. The European Election Studies, EES, described how the mainstream leftist parties adjusted to the new two-dimensional political space by adopting policies oriented toward these new middle-class voters. Chapter 6. The centrist shift on the economic cleavage and a liberal shift on the cultural cleavage were reinforced as the leadership of these parties became more middle-class and thus more attuned to these positions. Even in the 1979 Candidates to the European Parliament CEP study, clear liberal cultural positions, positive 0.50, were held by candidates from the German SPD, the French Socialists, British Labour, and the Dutch PVDA. As the parties on the left changed, so did the major parties on the right. Secularization decreased the social base for religious parties, as was evident in the several Catholic nations with Christian parties. Conservative parties did not become cultural liberals, but became less intensely conservative on many cultural matters. Following a contagion from the left, conservative parties enacted or accepted environmental legislation, greater protections for women's rights in society and the workplace, and other moderate cultural policies. At the same time, the major conservative parties in many nations actively pursued neoliberal economic programs, pushing them further to the right on the economic cleavage. This began with Thatcher's government in Britain, then Reagan's administration, and the Kohl government in Germany. The process of European unification further expanded this economic trend throughout all of Europe, even when European citizens were less supportive. New conservative anti-tax parties, such as the Danish and Norwegian Progress parties, called for a further retrenchment of the European welfare state and a smaller government role in society. In summary, the center point on the economic cleavage moved toward the right, as the center point on the cultural cleavage moved toward the left. Chapter 6. Such party moves might be an electorally sensible strategy in a Downsian one-dimensional space where preferences and party strategies are constrained and party preferences are presumably transitive. But political strategy is more complex in a two-dimensional space. If we assume a roughly normal distribution of the citizenry throughout the two-dimensional spaces constructed with the EES, the trends I have just described imply that gaps in party supply developed as parties adjusted their positions. The 1994 CEP showed limited party supply at the liberal end of the economic cleavage across Europe, as socialist parties moved toward the center and communist parties faded with the collapse of the Soviet Union. Another gap in party supply existed at the conservative pole of the cultural cleavage in the 1990s. The admittedly uneven empirical evidence suggests that the economic and social impact of modernization and globalization heightened liberal and conservative sensitivities to issues such as immigration, deindustrialization, gay rights, European integration, and other cultural issues. As noted earlier, there were signs of public ambivalence to the rapid pace of European integration pressed by political elites, but little partisan representation of these views. Kaas Muda observed that this convergence created a void in which far-right parties developed. This convergence created a fertile breeding ground for populism, as many voters began to see political elites as indistinguishable from one another, regardless of their party affiliations. To many Europeans, mainstream elites of all parties also seemed to share an essential powerlessness, owing to two massive transfers of authority that took place in the second half of the 20th century, from national governments to supranational entities such as the EU and the International Monetary Fund, and from democratically elected officials to unelected ones such as central bankers and judges. Consequently, new culturally conservative parties entered many party systems, or activists worked to transform existing parties. By the 2009 EES, a set of new far-right parties advocated extreme cultural positions, altering political discourse and public policy in Europe. Trump's election in 2016 reflects similar developments in the United States. The role of government policy in creating the conditions for far-right parties is seen in the correlations between satisfaction with government and positions on the economic and cultural cleavages. Citizens and party elites who favor conservative economic policies are more trustful of government across Europe as a whole. They presumably see governments following these policies. Conversely, those who favor liberal cultural policies are more trustful of government than are cultural conservatives. This pattern likely varies with the partisan composition of the incumbent government and recent public policies, but it is a general pattern across established European democracies. The end result of these processes is that the cultural cleavage now rivals the historic economic cleavage as a basis of electoral choice. In the 2009 and 2014 EESs, the cultural cleavage was generally a stronger predictor of party preferences when compared to the economic cleavage. The cultural cleavage is also growing in importance in U.S. presidential elections. This two-dimensional space now defines the major basis of political competition in these party systems. Clinton versus Trump, Macron versus Le Pen, Corbyn versus May, Danish Social Democrats versus the Danish People's Party. Such seems to be the politics of our time. Some people are aghast at the development of far-right parties because of their extremism. I share the concerns about the extremism of far-right party leaders who make radical statements and feed anxieties in order to draw attention to their cause. To an extent, however, these parties are a response to a representation gap on cultural issues that are an inevitable part of the contemporary policy debate. Chapter 8. Moreover, the EES shows that their voters are more moderate and diverse in their views. Party polarization on the cultural cleavage poses a challenge to democratic politics, but it is the type of challenge that democracy was designed to address. While this study has used the framework of the public policy demands influencing the party system's supply of choices, I also want to acknowledge that this relationship runs in both directions. Parties are sensitive to changes in public opinion, but they also can shape the evolution of public opinion. Party leaders can focus public opinion on the issues they choose to discuss and avoid other issues. There is an asymmetry to this relationship, however. Voters can hold positions without a party to represent their views, but a party cannot win votes on a program where there is no citizen support. Ultimately, this is a symbiotic relationship between voters and political parties to find a shared set of political views. In summary, most established democracies with proportional representation systems now include a diversity of parties to represent contrasting positions on the economic and cultural cleavages. Parties now populate these major choices in the two-dimensional space of political competition. These systems have a semblance of a demand-supply equilibrium because of this expansion in party choices. Looking toward the future. In most parliamentary democracies, the party systems of today bear only a partial resemblance to their structure several decades ago. There is increased volatility in election results. New parties emerge as some old parties disappear, seemingly at every election. Even if the party names remain the same, the content of party programs varies in fundamental ways. This book has described this evolutionary story. Unless there are unexpected changes, although there are always unexpected changes, this diversity in present-day political demands and party supply is likely to continue. Thus, what does this portend for the future of these democracies? Some analysts claim that these patterns of electoral change are a sign of the failure of political parties. The decline in turnout and the erosion of public trust and identification with political parties point in this direction, and there are many policy failures one could list, especially since the 2008 recession and ensuing financial crisis in Europe and the United States. I am less pessimistic than some of my colleagues, however. The empirical findings on the evolution of the economic cleavage and the emergence of a clear cultural cleavage demonstrate that most party systems responded to changes in citizen demands. The stable, or sclerotic, system of party representation in past decades is less applicable in the more varied and dynamic contemporary party systems. This study also showed very high congruence between voters and their chosen party on both the economic and cultural cleavages, which may have increased between 1979 and 2009. Chapter 8. Political parties followed varied strategies in responding to the public's changing policy demands. Some tried to anticipate change and moved ahead of citizen demands. Other parties resisted change and often lost votes and sometimes their political lives. However, the most distinctive aspect of the changing partisan landscape seems to come from new parties forming to represent new citizen demands on the cultural left, green parties and new left parties, and more recently far-left economic parties, and on the cultural right through far-right cultural parties. This realignment in party choices occurred in parallel with a realignment of the policy views of distinct social groups along the economic and cultural cleavages. Several decades ago, I had doubts about whether a new party cleavage structure could endure. The doubts reflected a concern that the new patterns of citizen demands were not embedded in institutionalized social groups, as were the social cleavages described by Lipset and Rokon. Labor union membership was decreasing, churches had more empty pews, and many of the social groups that focused on the cultural cleavage lacked comparable group-defined social networks that could inform and mobilize their political behavior. For example, there are no distinct clubs for post-materialists or associations of millennials to politically engage these supporters of cultural liberalism. My colleagues and I had earlier stated that political divisions were becoming value-based cleavages with uncertain permanence because of the lack of an institutional group basis. In electoral politics, 3 decades or more counts as permanence. The specific issues have often changed between elections, and the political actors have changed, but the economic and cultural cleavages have endured as a framework for political competition. Thus, issue-based cleavages and a realignment of party systems seem to be enduring consequences of this developmental process. Class and educational groups have realigned across nations. Social movements and other public groups provide cues on how others like yourself act politically, and social media are creating networks of like-minded people that can inform and mobilize their members. Yet issue-based cleavages should be more fluid than institutionalized group-based cleavages, such as workers voting for labor parties or Catholics voting for the Christian Democrats. This makes these alignments more susceptible to variations across elections, as campaigns emphasize different issue agendas or political conditions change the emphasis on one cleavage or the other. It is noteworthy, however, that the cultural cleavage appears more stable and structured than the economic cleavage, perhaps because of its connection with basic human values. Elements of continuing de-alignment, weaker party attachments, and a less deferential public should contribute to this fluidity. This should produce a more dynamic process of party competition within the two-dimensional cleavage space. While more choice is good for voters, it means more difficulty for parties in establishing an identity and appealing to voters. The relatively simple logic of appealing to the median voter in a one-dimensional political space allows parties to anticipate the vote gains losses by moving right or left on the dimension. Even these movements are constrained by existing parties to the left or right that limit the range of movement. The ranking of party preferences is also more clearly defined by distances on the dimension. However, campaign strategy becomes more complex, sometimes chaotic, in a two-dimensional space. There is often no dominant position in a two-dimensional space, and fewer constraints on the movement of parties because they can alter positions on either or both dimensions, and the rank preference order can more easily be changed as a result. Without wading into the social choice literature, the implications are straightforward. Parties have to compete not only with the parties to their left and right, but also parties above, below them, in the political space. A move in one direction creates multiple openings from competing parties. I earlier cited an example from the German SPD, which struggled to fend off the culturally liberal Greens in one election by moving in their direction, and then lost its economic-oriented voters to the CDU-CSU. In the next election, the SPD tried to recapture these centrist voters, only to lose votes to the Greens. Expand this strategizing to the Dutch or other party systems with a dozen viable parties. A Voronoi diagram of the party space can approach the chaos predicted by social choice modeling. In such a space, what's a party to do? In the past, political parties had simpler campaign choices and limited exposure to risk because of the constraints of a one-dimensional party system. The current framework of political competition creates greater challenges and risks for parties. Thus, I would expect more volatility in campaign programs, more volatility in voter choices, and more volatility in electoral outcomes around the structures of political competition described here. The complexity of the electoral process can carry over to governing. When party competition was structured along a single dimension, a simple model of connected minimum-winning connected coalitions, MWCC, was very likely in multi-party systems. The largest party or median party that was typically the initial basis for coalition formation would look to its left or its right and select adjacent parties to form a majority. Now, adjacent parties in a two-dimensional space might span different directions on one or both cleavages. Thus, it appears that the MWCC model is confronting new challenges. There are multiple examples of these tensions. The purple coalition of red and blue parties after the 1994 Dutch elections was a sign of things to come. The Belgian 2010 election was followed by 541 days of negotiations to create a new government. The 2017 Dutch election required 208 days to form the government. In Germany, the 1966 Grand Coalition was an exceptional development, conditioned by external political and economic factors. Since 2005, 8 of the following 12 years had a CDU-CSU-SPD government. Merkel's attempt at a very diverse CDU-CSU-FDP-Green coalition fell apart after the 2017 election, producing a long period of post-election negotiations and another grand coalition. With extreme parties now competing and winning a significant share of the vote, this further complicates the coalition process. The German SPD rejects a national coalition with the Linke. The CDU-CSU rejects a coalition including the AfD. Excluding these parties severely restricts the available options. The 2017 Italian election produced a similar chasm between party blocs that had rejected coalition options before the election. This might be a transitory problem. When the Green parties first competed in elections, they were also viewed as outside the range of legitimate coalition partners, but gradually these parties moderated, especially after sharing in a government. So the treatment of economic and culturally extreme parties creates another governing challenge. Perhaps the most basic challenge is how citizens react to this volatility, unpredictability, and the resulting public policies. Already, people are frustrated with governments, and especially politicians and political parties. part of this frustration comes from past unkept promises. One illustration is a quotation from a prominent political figure: "When I am elected, you will be forgotten no more." Think for a moment about who might have uttered this catchy phrase before you flip back to the endnotes. It could be the pro-Brexit forces during the referendum, Marine Le Pen in the 2017 French presidential election, or any number of conservative popular candidates in recent European elections, or Donald Trump. The quotation is from Bill Clinton's acceptance speech at the 1992 Democratic Party convention. However, since the Democrats took office in 1992 and then again in 2008, income inequality has increased, deindustrialization has continued, stalemate has replaced policymaking, and Americans became even more critical of the government. More than two decades later, many of the same frustrations exist within the American public that had suffered through the Great Recession and watched Washington politicians respond to the needs of others. Thus, at his inauguration in January 2017, Donald Trump stated, "The forgotten men and women of our country will be forgotten no longer. Everyone is listening to you now." Sound familiar? We know more about these processes of electoral change than we did in the past. There is growing evidence that diversity of social and political interests is a defining characteristic of affluent democracies. A search for a single explanation of mass political behavior may be futile in a world where social interests are fragmented, people are more assertive, power is decentralized, and individual freedoms are given greater latitude. The diversity documented here may be the best forecast for the future, and this diversity constitutes a major departure from the structured partisan politics of the past. This has been a Highbridge production, read by Sean Renette. Copyright 2018 by Russell J. Dalton. Published by arrangement with Oxford University Press. Recording copyright 2018 by Highbridge, a division of Recorded Books.